clerks Allison Wendy.
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Emma Tyne?
Present.
For the Plaintiff's Counsel, Hyundai Steel, J. David Park?
Present.
Henry Allman?
Present.
Henry Morris?
Present.
For the Defendant's Counsel, Elizabeth Speck?
Present.
Brendan Saslow?
Present.
For Defendant Intervenor, United States Steel, Thomas Beeline?
I'm here.
Sarah Shulman?
Also present.
Okay, and also just to state for the record, Nucor Corporation will not be participating in the oral argument today. The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Judge Richard K. Eating, presiding over consolidated lead docket number 19-00099, Hyundai Steel Corporation versus United States and the United States Steel Corporation.
Okay. Maybe we're going to start with the plaintiff today, and maybe both sides, or tell me who's going to argue.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Henry Allman for Plaintiff Hyundai Steel, and I will be presenting our affirmative argument.
Okay.
And, Your Honor, this is Tom Beeline from Cassie Levy Kent, representing United States Steel Corporation for Consolidated Plaintiff, and I will be presenting U.S. Steel's argument.
Okay. And anybody else?
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Henry Morris from on behalf of Hyundai Steel, and I'll be presenting our argument on the defense pertaining to the collapsing issue.
Okay. And anybody else? Who's arguing for the Department of Commerce?
Apologies, Your Honor. I wasn't sure if you wanted this. The plaintiff, Elizabeth Speck, will be arguing for the government.
Okay. And anyone else? Okay. So let's just start with the plaintiffs. Is that Mr. Allman?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll go ahead and get started in our affirmative presentation. And before I start, just since we're all on the phone here, if the court has any questions, feel free to interrupt me. You know, if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. And I really want to make sure that the court has a full understanding of the case today. So really, I'm here to answer your questions first and foremost, as well as give an overview of our argument.
Okay, so this is an AFA case, right?
That's right.
All right, and at least one of the issues is whether or not there are a couple of questionnaires, and whether or not the questionnaires were answered adequately. And so, are you going to tell me about that?
Yes, and my plan was to start with an overview of our reporting and why we think our reporting is correct and substantiated. And that starts really with the initial questionnaire, and then I'm going to turn to the one and only supplemental questionnaire that the department issued to us and highlight why our response to that was adequate and Commerce's limited questions on the topic did not discharge the agency's obligations under the AFA statute 1677 MD to notify us of the nature of any deficiency and afford us an opportunity to respond.
Okay.
So turning to just the overall reporting, you know, you see it in the documents before the agency, and you see it in the briefs to the court. And this all pertains to the manner in which the department requests product specification reporting and how it's used in the department's control number. And the department's control number is really what's at issue here. That's the, I call it a barcode. It's the specific coding that respondents are required to report their products in. So no matter how a company sells its products, no matter what the specifications are and how the company records them in their own books and records, Commerce standardizes all of that and asks companies to report it within this specific coding that's called the control number or CONNUM. One of the items that we included in the oral argument exhibits is Exhibit B, the second exhibit, includes an overview of the different codes, and this is the page itself is...
I have it.
It's from our reply brief where we thought it would be helpful to have this all in one place. And what Commerce requests in the initial questionnaire is a few different pieces of data, all pertaining to the product. The first group is the product code. And in that summary table, we have the instructions that Commerce includes. And it's report the commercial product code assigned by your company in the normal course of business. And for purposes of reporting this data to Commerce, we reported multiple product code fields. It's basically different clusters of information related to the product. And at issue here is the field called Product To You, and that relates to the specification. And the specification is, it can be an industry standard or a company standard. It just relates to the quality and use of the steel. And as we explained in our questionnaire response, for purposes of the product code to you and the product code generally, we reported the product code on the basis of the sales invoice. And here, for U.S. sales, the product is sold through Hyundai Steel's U.S. affiliate, HSA, or Hyundai Steel America. And so the U.S. sales data is HSA sales, so the data reported for the product code is the information from HSA's sales invoice to the customer. And the whole issue here comes up in a few limited instances where there is a slight mismatch between the product code to you, which is the sales invoice as sold, and the specification of the product as it's actually produced. And within this table, that's the next column over, is the spec grade U, report the specification designation type for the product. And the description we provided in the initial questionnaire response as to the basis of this reporting was it was based on HSA's purchasing records. So what we have is a product code based on the sales invoice and the specification reported based on the company's purchasing records. Now, why purchasing records? That's the information for the product as imported, as produced in Korea by Hyundai Steel.
So is there a right one and a wrong one? For Commerce, they're both right, but for Commerce's purposes, as far as you understand it, you'd think you'd have to choose one or the other. So was there a right one or a wrong one?
That's right. And there is a right one with respect to reporting the control number. And so, you know, I say there's both a right one and a wrong one. There's the right one to report as the control number, and that's the as-produced product. And in this reporting, that's the spec grade U, which is based on HSA's purchasing records. That's the material as produced and as purchased by the U.S. affiliate HSA from Hyundai Steel in Korea. Now,
so I might be getting ahead of myself here. So did you say to Commerce, by the way, if I were you, I'd use the spec grade U?
In effect, we did that because the spec grade U always matches the control number. And so, you know, what we have is a spec grade U that lines up with the control number, and that's as produced.
Okay.
And the reason that there's all this confusion here is that there are limited instances where there's a difference between the spec grade U and the product code U. And the reason that that difference is okay, the reason that that difference doesn't make the whole, you know, house fall apart, is the two pieces of data are pulled from different company from different records maintained by the company. And so if you look at what was purchased, you have one item. In the example we've provided here, it's the second one from the bottom. You can see there's a spec grade U of SPCC, but if you go to the product code, it's a different code. And that's just because when the product was invoiced to the customer, for whatever reason, it was invoiced as a slightly different product. And so,
maybe I'll ask this question again then. When commerce performs its method of constructing whatever they construct with this, which one should they be using?
They should be using the spec grade U.
And did you tell them that?
Yes, I believe so. It might take a second to find it. Bear with me one second.
Well, maybe somebody else can find it, and if you could go on with your argument.
Okay. So another piece to this is, you know, Commerce's own decisions confirm that it's supposed to be as produced. No, I understand I'm leaving aside for the second where in the response we say that. But we've cited cases that show that it needs to be as produced. And we point to Gray Portland Cement from Mexico. And you know, these cases show that Commerce's standard is to report the condom as produced.
Okay.
So, you know, this is all spelled out in the initial questionnaire response, and with respect to these minor differences, you know, we didn't provide it in response to this specific set of questions, but as part of the quantity and value reconciliation, we highlighted instances where there was a difference between the product code and the specification code, and those related to instances where the product code as sold would indicate that it's non-subject merchandise or vice versa, and the spec grade showed that it was in fact subject merchandise. So we made clear in that respect that we reported our products based on the product code as produced, the spec grade U, and that's how we assign the control number. So, you know, moving on from the initial questionnaire, we only received one supplemental questionnaire in this case. This isn't a situation where there was some ambiguity or some deficiency that the agency identified. Rather, we submitted this initial information, and Commerce issued just one supplemental questionnaire that really had no direct questions on this topic. The only question that Commerce points to is, I believe, question 7 in that supplemental. In there, Commerce asked, Commerce asked, please ensure that you have accurately reported all product specifications in your sales and cost reporting, including whether or not the merchandise is prime or non-prime. Revise your response as necessary. So the government's position here is that this question is all that the agency needs to do to comply with the AFA statute before resorting to AFA. You know, and central to this, the element of the supplemental questionnaire is that this really does not do what the statute requires. You know, the statute requires that the department promptly inform the person submitting the response, and this is the key phrase here, of the nature of the deficiency, and shall, to the extent practical, provide that person with an opportunity to remedy or explain it. Here, this question says nothing as to the nature of the deficiency. All it says is take a look and make sure you've done it right. You know, that does not offer a company the required notification of the nature of any deficiency. So, you know, leaving aside the question of whether we've reported it accurately or not, we think we have. Leaving aside whether the initial questionnaire fully explained everything, we think it did. To the extent it did not, the only reason that the record would be lacking is because Commerce did not ask about it. And, you know, that leaves, there's no hole in the record, per se, but that leaves this question mark that Commerce is now saying, we don't trust the reporting, we can't, it's not reliable. But they never said that to us. You know, all they said is, please ensure that you have accurately reported all product specifications. So to say, make sure you got it right without identifying any problems, it doesn't do what the statute requires.
Okay.
So that's really, that question is really at the heart of this case in our view. You know, we think the reporting is right. Our initial questionnaire is how respondents across cases do this, provided all the information Commerce requested. To the extent there's anything missing, it's because Commerce never asked about it.
Okay.
With that, I'd like to turn a little bit to the application of AFA. You know, and here, what Commerce did at a very fundamental level, Commerce identified one problem and then applied AFA to a much bigger set of data. You know, and the jurisprudence is clear that in order to apply facts available, Commerce needs to have a gap in the record. You can't replace good data with facts otherwise available. It's not what the statute allows. And here, there's a few different ways that Commerce has over-applied AFA, and these are all discussed in our affirmative brief. Primarily at pages, pages 21 through 29 of our affirmative brief. And I'm going to go through a few different ways that Commerce over-applied AFA. And again, we don't think that there's any basis to apply AFA as the reporting was reasonable, accurate, and substantiated, and we were never afforded any opportunity to address any of the claimed deficiencies. But first, as discussed at the outset, the issue here is the appropriate reporting of the control number. The way that the control number is used in the department's calculations is to take a U.S. price and find an appropriate normal value. And Commerce does that using the control number. It finds the U.S. control number, and it finds the appropriate normal value based on that control number. Thus, to the extent there's something wrong with the control number, it doesn't mean that all the other data, it doesn't mean that the sales, that the actual sales price reported, doesn't mean that all the expense data reported are wrong. All it means is that Commerce's program is going to have a difficult time figuring out how to find an appropriate normal value. So any AFA should not apply to that full set of data for the individual sales. You know, if the condom is wrong, it shouldn't be that, that Commerce just plugs in a plug rate for all of those sales. You know, it's basically saying you got the control number wrong, so we're disregarding your normal value, we're disregarding your U.S. price, and we're just going with this. You know, that's at a very basic level, that's applying facts available for perfectly usable data. The second way that Commerce over-applied AFA relates to the universe of sales to which Commerce threw the data out. And we can see this again back at that chart at Exhibit B. And the first example it shows a sale where it's SPCC and SPCC in the product code and spec rate view. There's no mismatch. But Commerce nonetheless included these sales and sales like it in the pool of transactions for which Commerce applied AFA. Now, why did they do that? They said that they couldn't rely on the control number for the entire control number. But the only issue that Commerce identified was with respect to these limited mismatches, where there's no mismatch.
When you say limited, what percentage of them did they claim were mismatches?
If you look at this is in all brackets, and this is a document that's not in the exhibits that we provided, but it's in the appendix. It's appendix document 21, which has the preliminary results calculation memorandum. And that has the quote-unquote non-AFA sales and the AFA sales. And the information is behind brackets, but I think it's reasonable to say that the total AFA quantity was approximately 10% of the reported U.S. sales. So they, by identifying problematic control numbers, they applied AFA to 10% of the database. And we think that that's grossly overstated, and we've provided at its exhibit J in the oral argument exhibits is an analysis that we included in our case brief to Commerce. And at attachment one, we've identified and summarized the sales for which there was this quote-unquote mismatch and the sales for which there's no mismatch. And that exhibit has the total AFA quantity. And again, it's a proprietary number. We're sticking to public comments here. But there's a grand total, and that's the total quantity of AFA sales. But if you go up to the top row, we've identified all the sales that had that there was no mismatch. There's a perfect match between the product code, the spec grade code, and the control number. And that's the vast majority of the sales to which Commerce applied AFA. The two rows down below in that exhibit highlight the instances where there's an actual quote-unquote mismatch. And you can see the first row, it's called C1, shows it's a minuscule number relative to the total quantity and total number of sales for which Commerce has applied AFA. So based on this exhibit, what you can see is based on the small number of non-matching sales, Commerce applied AFA not only to those, but also to the much larger number up top. And these are the sales that are within that group of control numbers where there's no mismatch. And while I'm on this exhibit, I'll highlight one other area where Commerce over-applied AFA, and that's this row that's labeled C2. And C2 refers to sales which were further manufactured. So HSA, Huntingsteel America, the U.S. affiliate, in many instances further manufactures the subject cold-rolled steel. And when it does so, the original product code no longer applies. You get a new product code that relates to the further manufactured product. For these sales, consistent with that product code, in this key product code 2U field that Commerce is pointing to, what we reported in that field was NA, not applicable, because it's not applicable. There is no product code 2U field for these further manufactured sales. Nonetheless, Commerce included this group within the pool of AFA sales. This is a relatively small quantity. This isn't what's driving the exorbitant margin here. But this highlights that the agency really was acting in a very broad manner, just saying this doesn't line up, we're throwing it out and not looking at what the data actually says. These are sales where they did not, there is no product code 2U, and we got AFA because the product code 2U did not match the specification grade.
Okay.
One other instance where Commerce over-applied AFA, a few minutes ago I mentioned that in the sales reconciliation, we highlighted certain instances where the product code 2U and the specification grade did not match. That means in this exhibit, exhibit C6B, I believe, in our initial response, we highlighted where there is a mismatch, because the highlighting this mismatch was essential to substantiating the reported quantity and value. Thus, this group of sales has a full explanation on the record. Commerce didn't ask about that explanation, and there's record exhibits and documents to show that the difference between the product code 2U and the specification grade was due to the difference between the sales invoice and the as imported product. So Commerce has applied AFA where the record supports this quote-unquote mismatch. You know, we don't think Commerce has the basis to apply AFA where the record shows there's a difference. And the final area where Commerce over-applied AFA is, again, going back to that chart, the difference, that issue is really where there's a mismatch and it affects the control number. You know, assuming, grant the government their position, we got it all wrong. But to get it wrong, it only matters if it impacts the control number. But there is a group of sales, and we've highlighted these in attachment 2 to our case brief to Commerce, highlighted instances where this claimed mismatch had no impact on the control number. In other words, whether we reported it based on specification grade or product code, it would make no difference in the condom coding. Commerce didn't address these arguments in the final determination.
Say that to me again. Are you saying that it would just be the same code?
Exactly. So okay. Whether we were to switch between, if Commerce, let's in a hypothetical where Commerce issued us another supplemental and said report it based on product code 2U, there'd be no change to the control number. The two codes, the two product code and specification code, both would be captured within the same condom code reported to Commerce. So whether we picked one as the basis or the other, you're going to land in the same spot with respect to the control number. So these are areas where, you know, again, we don't think there's any basis for the agency to have resorted to AFA, particularly without issuing an additional supplemental questionnaire. But even if they did, these areas highlight, you know, how Commerce overreached in this regard. And a key case that we cited to in our briefs is Dillinger France, which we think stands for the proposition that when applying AFA, Commerce needs to limit its application of AFA to really filling issues where there is a gap in the record. And the agency cannot use a claimed error to throw out good data. And whether that's over-expanding to apply to sales where there's no mismatch, or to throwing out good data with respect to U.S. pricing, where the only issue is the condom, we think in both instances the agency overreached in applying AFA where there's good data and no record basis to do it. And then, you know, one final issue that I'd like to address in our affirmative comments is really the difference between this first administrative review and the investigation. You know, what you'll hear from the other side, and you've seen it in their briefs, is that, look, this is just a continuation of what Hyundai Steel did in the investigation. And in the investigation, they got AFA, so there shouldn't be a surprise that we're getting AFA again. But that's wrong on multiple fronts. The first and most important, in my view, is the record differences between the two cases. You know, if you read the department's decision memorandum and Judge Barnett's opinion following the investigation, there are many reporting elements that were at issue with respect to the control number. It was a detailed verification exercise that the agency performed and looked at all aspects of Hyundai Steel's reporting. This doesn't mean that just because Commerce didn't look at it in detail here, that Commerce should be faulted for that. But really what's at issue is the fact that there were multiple scenarios at play. And among these scenarios, the one that's most parallel to the facts here, which we've quoted at page 20 of our reply brief, which is page 62 of the investigation decision memorandum, Commerce looked at instances in the investigation where there are these quote-unquote mismatches. And Commerce didn't apply AFA to all of them. They only applied AFA where, at verification, Commerce didn't accept the explanations and documentation report of verification. In contrast, where the documents supported the reporting, Commerce said, and this is a quote from page 62 of the decision memorandum, "It is reasonable to conclude that HSA had misidentified the specification in its resale, and the proper specification was reflected in the reported condom for the sale in question." So, you know, based on the record of the investigation, based on this statement in Commerce's decision memorandum, it was reasonable to assume that Commerce, having accepted the fact that mismatches would not automatically be deemed incorrect or automatically be deemed to apply AFA, that this reporting was accurate and consistent in the first review. The second piece I'd like to highlight is Commerce's statements in this first review are basically, look, we're just doing what we did in the investigation. You know, as I just said, that's not really true. In the investigation, Commerce didn't apply AFA in these situations. They only did it where the materials at verification Commerce found to be unsatisfactory. But second, it goes back to this scope of how Commerce applied AFA. In the investigation, Commerce is very clear that they limited their AFA application to specific sales. It's only where those sales had mismatches, or only the unsubstantiated mismatches Commerce applied AFA. Here, they applied AFA to the entire control numbers. So it's really it's a very different AFA application. Now, obviously, Commerce, each case stands on its own. Commerce can diverge and do things differently, but that cuts the other way as well. Each case stands on its own, meaning whatever Commerce is doing in the investigation, it doesn't automatically carry over to the first review. It doesn't automatically relieve Commerce of the burden of having to notify Hyundai Steel of any deficiencies. You know, the other side's best argument is that by virtue of the investigation, we were on notice, and therefore the statute no longer applied. But that's not what the statute says. The statute requires a notification in each proceeding. You know, each case stands on its own. That's kind of the bedrock of Commerce's administrative practice and the administrative review process. And one other difference I'd like to highlight between the investigation and the first review, and again, this goes back to Joint Appendix Document 21, which is not in our exhibits. At the first page, Commerce calculates the margin, you know, for the non-AFA sales. The public number, they calculated a 1.99% margin. After applying AFA, that 1.99 went up 18-fold. It went from 1.99 to 36.59. That's a huge jump. You know, this is based on one narrow reporting issue. They've multiplied our margin by 18%. Just to highlight, you know, I've said that the difference here between the first review and the investigation is that Commerce applied AFA to entire condoms here and only specific limited sales, only where there's specific mismatches in the investigation. And in Judge Barnett's opinion, it's Flip Opinion 1880, footnote 28, Judge Barnett highlights the impact of Commerce's AFA determination with respect to the control numbers in the investigation. And again, that's a decision we disagreed with. You know, we did not win, but we still disagree with it. Commerce's AFA application there resulted in a 4.64% increase to the margin. That's a small tweak, you know, and this isn't, I'm not saying this to be results driven. I'm saying this to highlight that these two decisions and the way that Commerce applied AFA are completely different. In one case, it's a 4% jump. In another case, it's a 34% jump. These are really two different decisions, different outcomes, and really highlights that Commerce has gone overbroad in applying AFA. And then with respect to the earlier, Your Honor, you had a question about where we identified that we used the specification to report the control number. And what I would highlight is Exhibit B4. It shows that it links the specification code to the control number, and there's an exhibit that details the specification code to the control number. So that's one instance in the initial questionnaire where we would have indicated that specification was used as the basis of the control number.
Okay.
And with that, Your Honor, if you have any additional questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, we will rest on our affirmative comments.
Okay. I don't have any questions. If I take it that the next person who would argue for the plaintiff would be Mr. Morris, but he wants to talk about the collapsing issue. Is that true or false?
That's correct, and that's really we're plaintiffs and defendant interveners, and that's really a defendant intervener argument.
Okay, so let's someone from Commerce prepared to address Mr. Billeen's argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Did you want me to talk about the collapsing or about the AFA? Or is it Elizabeth Speck for the government?
I just about what Mr. Billeen was talking about. Just the AFAs.
And Your Honor, this was for AFA. This was Henry Ullman for Hyundai Steel.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Ullman, I crossed your name out when you started talking. So I apologize to you.
That's all right. It's hard to go ahead.
All right. So is someone from Commerce prepared to talk about the AFA issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Who is this?
Elizabeth Speck from the government.
Okay. So what's wrong with what he has to say?
Well, Your Honor, in terms of what of how Commerce perceives it, I wanted to back up a little bit to the questionnaire because a lot of we of course submit that Commerce reasonably applied partial adverse facts available with an adverse inference to Hyundai.
Okay.
In its briefing, Hyundai has argued that the CONUM and the prod code and the spec grade code are separate and that the spec grade and the prod code too are not part of the CONUM. I just wanted to briefly address why the prod code 2 and the spec grade were relevant and why they informed the CONUM. In terms of looking at the questionnaire on Exhibit C or PDF pages 19 through 20, Commerce goes through some of the elements of the CONUM, which include the quality code, which addresses whether it's ultra-high strength steel, and it goes to a certain ASTM standard, and there are, I believe, 8 codes there. And then on the next page, C2, there's also the minimum specified yield strength, and those are also tied to a certain ASTM standard. And so for the prod code 2, Hyundai, again, this isn't part of the CONUM, but Hyundai, and when I say CONUM, I mean control number. Hyundai has a multi-digit code system for standard code, which would likely tell Commerce, for example, whether the control number should reflect ultra-high strength steel or any of the other 8 quality codes that I just discussed. And it would also tell Commerce the PSI rating, which would indicate the product's strength. So while it
and
is,
why? I've got that, but why would it matter?
It matters because of the inconsistencies in between. There were mismatches between the product code 2 and the spec grade. Commerce didn't have a way to match the United States market control number to a home market control number, because it didn't know exactly what the physical characteristics for quality and strength were in the U.S. market for some sales within certain control numbers and ultimately the entire control number. So essentially,
okay,
it calls the other sales within the control number into question because Commerce cannot be sure whether it accurately describes a particular characteristic.
Okay. So I'm getting ahead of myself here, but at any point, did you inform them that you needed this information to be right, and why?
Your Honor, we submitted the questionnaire required these certain codes to be reported, and then also in the June 8th supplemental questionnaire, Commerce instructed Hyundai to ensure that it had, quote, accurately reported all product specifications in your sales and cost reporting, unquote, and then also to revise your responses as necessary. And we submit that this question addresses whether the prod code 2 and spec grade.
Yeah, but you never, so you didn't say, we've identified some of these problems, and here's an example, and fix them.
Your Honor, that is the question is that we
if you could just answer that one, yes or no.
It's our position that question addresses
no,
the issue.
No, just answer the question, please. Yes or no? Then I'll let you explain.
Your Honor, the questionnaire says what it says. We have an interpretation. Obviously, the other side has a different interpretation.
That's not an interpretation. Did you inform them that you had identified any specific problems?
We identified.
You can answer this yes or no. I know the answer, so why don't you just tell me the answer,
Your Honor? Again, the question.
All right, you're not going to answer it. Fine. Please go on with your argument,
Your Honor. We would submit that this accurately submits the requirements of 1677 MD.
We'll get to that eventually. Just go on with your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. We would submit that through this, because the prod code 2 and the spec grade pairs didn't match, as a result, Commerce could not tell which specification was appropriate and ultimately what code to use for the quality yield strength portion of the U.S. control number to to match it. It didn't understand the quality and the physical characteristics for quality and strength in the United States market for some sales within the control number and ultimately the entire control number. Here, it's reasonable for Commerce to expect consistent specification information so that Commerce can determine what physical characteristic codes to be used in the control number. Our brief also addressed the case that Hyundai has cited, Gray Portland Cement and Clinker from Mexico. We explained in that case, Commerce observed in some instances that respondents sold cement meeting one ASTM standard on the basis of cement meeting a lower ASTM standard, but here the relationship between the reported specification was not examined, and so Commerce is uncertain of the relationship between the inconsistent specifications. We also note that Hyundai should have been on notice of this issue from the investigation.
Do you have any, maybe I didn't read your papers closely enough, do you cite any case for this proposition?
I'm sorry, for which position, Your Honor?
The idea that they should have been tipped off by the investigation.
We cited the case in the investigation. We'd also note that page 62 of the, in comment 12 of the final determination, does seem to indicate that there was an issue between these two matches. It says, furthermore, some of the mismatches identified by the respondent at the HSA verification involved two different specifications for which the quality used as the basis for reporting the CONUM cannot be consistent with the quality identified under the PROD code 2U field. We also note we had misstated this, unfortunately, in our brief on page 17. We cited some language in the questionnaire as being part of the administrative review questionnaire, when in fact it was not explicitly included in the administrative review, but was included in the investigation, and that was where Commerce had asked Hyundai to assign a control number to each unique product code reported in the Section C sales data file, and that identical products should be assigned the same control number in each record in every file in which the product is referenced, e.g. products with identical physical characteristics reported in the foreign market sales file and the U.S. market sales file should have the same control number. Again, that was only in the investigation questionnaire. It was not, that is an error in our brief, that it was in the questionnaire at the administrative review, but Hyundai did include that language in its response to Commerce's questionnaire in the administrative review, which indicated that Hyundai understood that Commerce wanted products that had the same characteristics to have the same control numbers. In terms of,
I've had a fair number of cases where the Commerce Department has said, we can use any methodology we want in the review. We don't have to. We're not bound by what we did in the investigation. So I guess I don't quite get why. Maybe you could just explain it to me. Why should they have been tipped off by the investigation?
Your Honor is correct that they are, that each proceeding is separate. However, these were extremely close in time, and certainly these are similar codes and similar issues. The questionnaire did ask them this information, the supplemental for the specific codes, and the supplemental questionnaire did follow up with the product specification issue. I don't have a specific case saying that one informs the other. It's just our position that simply because of the issues that were brought up and the proximity in time and the fact that Hyundai's response to Commerce's initial questionnaire included this language, demonstrated that Hyundai was aware that Commerce would have expected consistency in this information. Again, it's just regardless of the investigation administrative review issue, it's generally reasonable for Commerce to expect consistent specification information so that Commerce can determine the physical characteristic codes to be used in the control number.
Okay. What else do you have to tell me?
In terms of the over-application of the alleged over-application of the control numbers, as Commerce indicated in its final issues and decisions memorandum, It explained that Hyundai's inconsistent reporting of product specification precludes commerce from accurately determining normal value because commerce cannot match the U.S. sales of the affected condoms to the appropriate sales in Hyundai's home market database. Thus, commerce was unable to determine an appropriate match and could not confidently establish characteristics relating to the specification of sales in the affected condoms. And that is why commerce applied it on a condom-wide basis here. Here, commerce reasonably applied the highest calculated transaction-specific margin as the basis for adverse facts available for the condoms for which Hyundai reported contradictory product specification information. We would just note that this was, as we read the final decision memorandum in the investigation, an approach that commerce did take with their, we would note that page 63, the very end of commerce, of comment 12, commerce indicated that for spec C, it assigned, or quote, we are assigning as AFA the highest calculated margin for any other reported U.S. sale of Hyundai steel. But for spec D, spec H, and spec E, all of which involve only home market sales, as AFA, we are revising the reported product characteristics and therefore also the condoms as described above and assigning the appropriate condoms the highest reported total cost of manufacturing for the condoms in question, which appears to be a condom-wide basis application.
And was this consistent with what you did in the investigation?
Your Honor, we would submit that the Commerce took both approaches in the investigation as indicated in reading the IDM. I don't have the specific material, the sale breakdown in front of me, but the idea is that they were on notice that Commerce could take this approach.
And so how about the one where the questionnaire had the NA because they were the remanufactured steel. Was that the position that you took in the investigation?
Commerce didn't specifically address these. In this review, Commerce didn't specifically address the different categories that Hyundai has gone through in its argument. It simply said that it was unable to determine an appropriate match and couldn't confidently establish the characteristics, and therefore it applied it as a whole to the affected condom, which at least for some of the specifications, I don't know if it was the precise issue, Commerce did apply on a condom-wide basis in the investigation, at least for some issues.
Well, I mean, if you expected them to be tipped off that they would require something, they would require the same sort of information that they were required to provide in the investigation, you would think that you would also have tipped them off that everything is going to be treated the same.
Your Honor, ultimately, it's not Commerce's burden to develop the record. We note that it's the respondent.
No, I'm talking about your methodology, not the record. You would think that if they're supposed to take notice that they have to provide the information in the same way, you would think that you would also be tipping them off that you're going to use the same methodology. Is that an absurd idea?
Again, I think Commerce's obligation is only to apply a methodology that is consistent with the applicable statute. And here we would submit because Commerce determined it couldn't use the information, it was not able to determine these matches, Commerce's approach was reasonable.
So you expect them to take a notice of certain parts of the investigation, but not others. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. We submitted that Commerce took these two approaches in be in the investigation and that that would be that they were aware that these were a potential range of options that, that Commerce could use as a methodology dependent on what the findings were in the administrative review.
And where did you tell them that before they answered the questionnaire?
The investigation memorandum, I don't think Commerce has to spell out in its questionnaires what it can use as AFA. It certainly applied AFA in the same way in the preliminary that it did in the final. We have simply, I've read the relevant portions of the from the end of comment 12 on page 63 of the final IDM and the investigation.
Okay. Now, I think it's possible that facts available could be applied here. What was your reason for applying adverse facts available?
The adverse inference was applied because Commerce explained that it couldn't use the information. It determined that it wasn't required to use additional information that Hyundai provided because it could not be used without undue difficulty. Commerce determined that it would be unduly difficult to determine the proper specification for an accurate match because Hyundai's inconsistent reporting precluded Commerce from accurately matching U.S. sales of the affected condoms and the appropriate sales in Hyundai's home market database. And so Hyundai hadn't at least didn't satisfy the statutory criteria under 1677ME after they had received notice for Commerce. And so here, given the opportunity, Hyundai did not provide information that was from which Commerce was able to determine an appropriate match. And that led to the application.
And does this also turn two? It seems to me that there are two issues that turn on this question in the supplemental questionnaire, which said, make sure that the economists are right. In order to sustain you, I'd have to find that the question fulfilled the statute as far as letting the respondent know what the problems were. But also to apply AFA, I think I'd have to conclude that this question adequately let the respondent know what was expected of them. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Is there anything else to this part of the argument?
Nothing else from the government, Your Honor. The only thing I wanted to add is that they've put together this, I believe Hyundai put together its exhibit of a chart of the number of sales that it claims, and I just would note that Commerce did not perform an analysis identifying the specific sales that were affected. It merely determined that it couldn't match the specifications.
In a particular number of cases?
Yes, Your Honor. It identified the condoms that it affected. I believe it was 10 control numbers that it affected, but it didn't perform an analysis regarding the specific number of sales.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Who's next?
Your Honor, this is Tom Beeline with Cassie Levy Kent on behalf of U.S. Steel as defendant intervener as well as consolidated plaintiff. Would you be okay with me addressing just a couple of follow-up points on the defense side of the ledger on this AFA issue?
Mr. Ullman's going to have the last word on this anyway.
Right. That's what I was thinking, Your Honor. And then we can turn to our plaintiff side of it, I guess, after Mr. Altman does his reply.
That's fine. Yep.
Okay, great. Thanks, Your Honor. I don't want to take too much time on this issue. I think my colleague from the government did a very good job explaining the facts of the record. But I did want to draw the court's attention to specific issues here. So, first, you know, just to make it crystal clear, in the initial questionnaire response, I think Commerce rightly changed its standard questionnaire for Hyundai for this first administrative review because of the findings it made at verification. Mr. Allman summarized them well, where he explained that Commerce, in their verification exercise, found multiple issues with the specification not lining up with the particular CONUM. So in the initial questionnaire, Commerce explicitly directs Hyundai not to use the spec grade field in its CONUM coding. But then Hyundai somehow does, so they ignored that request, and then they provided the information in a variety of places about how product code to H indicates specification, and spec grade H would indicate specification. And then on the U.S. side, they say prod code to U equals specification, and spec grade U equals specification. And so while they may have ignored Commerce's specific request in the original questionnaire to not use the spec grade field for developing their CONUM coding, they nonetheless confirmed what Commerce had found during verification, which was that prod code and spec grade were the same. And that was sort of what was the verification exercise. And then after the information came in, and just, you know, for clarity, U.S. Steel submitted a very lengthy, what we would call a deficiency comment. And in these cases, the domestic industry hires us as their lawyers to be able to, opine and help Commerce along because, you know, we've got experience in steel that the Commerce team might not have or in tracing product. And so we put in a very lengthy deficiency letter. This is at Exhibit E of the submission that went to the court today. And there you can see it's several pages identifying apparent issues with product coding. And there we've provided a couple of ways for Commerce to suss out really what is going on here. Why are there issues that we're observing in product coding if in the verification those fields should be identical and then in Hyundai's own submission those fields should be identical? And here we've basically identified that the CONUM coding might be fundamentally flawed because Hyundai used spec grade in contravention of Commerce's questionnaire. And so in that, you know, you can sort of compare many of these questions. Commerce actually adopted some version of them in sending Hyundai the supplemental questionnaire. And so to Your Honor's various questions of the parties, I think they're fair, which is, did Hyundai have a reasonable expectation of knowing what was wrong with what they reported? And we would submit that they did because, again, these proceedings were very close in time. This didn't happen in a vacuum. At verification, issues were found as between spec grade and CONUM. Commerce then adjusted its questionnaire in the first administrative review. Hyundai ignored that adjustment, did what they wanted to do, and then we're in a position where the fields don't match. And so what do you do with that fact pattern when you're told by Hyundai all the fields are the way they should be? Should Commerce have gone back and said...
Could I ask you to hold on just a second?
Yep.
The letter that you wrote, the deficiency letter, was that in the investigation or in the review?
It's in the review, Your Honor.
Okay. And they took... some portions of your deficiency letter, Commerce, and actually incorporated them in some of their questions in the supplemental questionnaire. Is that true?
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
But they didn't seem to include that portion of your letter that talked about the condoms. Is that true?
I think what Commerce did was they ignored the narrative for why we thought it was important, and they just took the specific question. That's fairly standard practice from Commerce, where they will maybe take inspiration from the narrative and ask a specific question that they're interested in, or they may take the question and say, there may be something to that, and the defendant intervener has identified reasons for why that question would be asked. So they don't replicate the reasons.
So Hyundai wouldn't would be wrong to say, to reason by implication, that you included part of the deficiency letter, but not you, by you, I mean Commerce. Mm-hmm. Commerce included part of the deficiency letter, but not all of it, and that we should assume that they did this on purpose, and that what they're really driving at from the deficiency letter are the things that are were actually included. Would that be wrong?
So I think, Your Honor, I don't often want to assume or presume for anybody how they would read a variety of different filings. I think given the way that these are adversarial proceedings with, you know, Commerce trying to act in good faith by being, you know, a fair judge of the record, you know, I think it's fair that both parties will look to what the other is arguing to sort of see where the puck is going. If, you know, our argument in our deficiency letter was the product coding is wrong, and one of the requests is please confirm that your product coding is correct, and Commerce replicates the please confirm your product coding is correct, and then, you know, we do a further analysis on the supplemental information that comes in, and the product code and spec grade fields don't align the way that you would think that they would, then that indicates, then that indicated to us is why we filed the preliminary comments that something was wrong with the condom coding. And again, Your Honor, I do want to just, you know, reiterate that in the investigation, you know, it was determined that spec grade didn't line up very well with the reported condom. And so if spec grade was being used to prepare the condom in an administrative review where there was not going to be a verification, what we were basically trying to say was, hey, these things ought to be lining up. Why aren't they lining up? And you're right, Your Honor, that Commerce didn't replicate the narrative, but I think it would be a fair read of the record for any party to say there may be some there on our product coding and spec grade issues.
Okay, thanks.
So I think that's it, Your Honor, from my perspective. I did want to call your attention to Exhibit H, which is Hyundai's underlying brief on this topic, just because in their briefs to the court, I think, you know, they're trying to say, well, in our reconciliation, we called this out as an issue. You know, on page 100 of the joint exhibits for oral argument that were filed with the court, this is in Exhibit H.
Hold on a second, please.
Sorry, go ahead.
I have to find H.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It is page 100 of the PDF, if you have a PDF open.
Okay. Page 126, so I'm going to go back to 100. Yes, I got it.
Okay, so this is a paragraph right in the middle of the page. It starts with the word moreover. It's page 10 of their brief. Basically, the way that it's presented here is that there's a bit of an admission that, you know, Hyundai was expecting that Commerce would have to piece together various things to understand that their reporting changed from how Commerce had just verified it. And, you know, I think that where we land in this case is, you know, to Your Honor's questions about what was Hyundai supposed to read into Commerce's questions, it's sort of as if Hyundai is asking the court to say Commerce should have read into our answers. And, you know, in that world, I think, you know, that is construed against the person who has the burden of preparing an adequate and accurate record. And then to Your Honor's questions about, okay, if I believe that facts available should be applied because of what has been pointed out, where's the adverse inference come from? I would submit to Your Honor that the adverse inference comes from a failure to cooperate, which is basically a failure at the initial stage to tell Commerce, we are not following your questionnaire. We are using spec grade as a field for building up the condom. And when we put a chart that says product equals specification and spec grade equals specification, we don't mean that those specifications are the same.
So can you cite to me a case that says that if they didn't ultimately cooperate, that AFA can still be applied?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, if they were answering questions, that AFA can still be applied?
Yeah, if ultimately they do the best that they can in order to produce this information, you seem to be saying that if they initially didn't put forth the maximum effort, that AFA can still be applied.
So I'm suggesting, Your Honor, that the failure to cooperate can look at the entire course of the administrative record to establish a failure to cooperate. And the question is basically, if you don't answer the question or you provide unreconcilable information to Commerce, is there evidence of a failure to cooperate? And here what I'm suggesting to you is that there is record evidence that Commerce has on its record to suggest that there was a failure to cooperate going back to the initial questionnaire, which is fair.
Can you cite to me a case that says that they didn't adequately answer the initial questionnaire, but they ultimately did their best to answer the questions, that AFA can be applied?
So I think it's a little bit of, and I hate to use this one because it always comes up, it's the Nippon Steel, the Federal Circuit one, where I think, in that case you've got an element of attempted answers, and the Federal Circuit basically said, intent or motivation don't matter. You're careless.
Isn't that the maximum effort case?
I think that one is the case where, the Federal Circuit says carelessness and inattentiveness alone are sufficient to suffice. Here I think, we could latch on to carelessness or inattentiveness. Let's say that Commerce asks the question, is it sunny or cloudy outside? And the respondent says, I don't want to answer that specific question. I'm just not going to answer it. Commerce can ask again if it wants to, and it can say, please make sure you've answered all of our questions. And if the respondent doesn't cure that particular question, I would suggest that is sufficient to apply adverse inferences. It's a withholding of information, and it's a failure to cooperate because the party didn't go back and correct its misstatement.
Okay. Anything else?
I appreciate the indulgence, Your Honor, and I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Who's next, and what are we going to talk about?
Your Honor, this is Henry Allman for Hyundai Steel.
If
we want to
anything
on the AFA issue,
you can get the last word on AFA.
Yes, absolutely. Appreciate it, Your Honor. First, I want to focus on something that Mr. Beline just mentioned. And in his argument, and in their briefs as well, they're suggesting that Hyundai Steel somehow diverged from the instructions in the questionnaire by using this specification grade, spec grade U, by using specification in the control number. The important issue here is that Commerce tells respondents not to use these fields in the CONNUM because it's not Commerce's coding. The specification grade is based on the actual specification. He suggested that Commerce somehow modified the questionnaire between the investigation and the first review. I'd say, first off, that's irrelevant. But to the extent it is, that document's not on the record, I have it in front of me. It's the same question. In the investigation, the questionnaire said, this field should not be used in the construction of the condom. The task order, the first review, they changed one word. It said, this field should not be included in the construction of the condom. The key point here is that that instruction basically says, so the condom is a concatenation of a series of variables. You have a number of physical characteristics that are these, you know, a few digit codes, 12001, et cetera, that you just glomp together into a larger string of numbers. Commerce's instruction here says, tell me what the specification is, you know, using industry standard codes, ASTM A980, grade 130. Commerce's instruction is, don't type, when you're making the control number, don't type in ASTM A980. The instruction is, go down to the control number portion of the questionnaire, which immediately follows, and fill it out based on our provided codes. That's exactly what we did. To suggest that we did not follow the instruction by using specification to inform how we identified the control number characteristics is, it's just inconsistent with the questionnaire instructions. And with all due respect, it's really designed to just muddy the waters and confuse matters. And that's really the only hope that the other side has, is that somehow this all gets so confused that Commerce can't piece it all together. But that's not what's going on here. We followed the exact instructions, and to the extent there's any confusion, that's where the supplemental questionnaire process comes in. And, you know, we just heard the argument that this open-ended question, ensure that you've reported accurately, somehow put us on notice. But that question doesn't do that. The question doesn't identify any problem. It just says, ensure that you've done this correctly. And we spelled this out in our reply brief, and Mr. Beilein's presentation goes to this, suggesting that there's this sort of legislative history behind the question, in that we should have known and should have read and should have understood what Commerce was looking for based on our review of petitioner's comments. Now, of course, you know, the statute tells Commerce what to do. The statute, before resorting to AFA, puts a burden on Commerce to take action. Commerce didn't do that. So even if petitioner's comments were clear, Commerce didn't ask a question that shed any light on this issue. More importantly, if you actually look at petitioner's comments, they say nothing about this claimed mismatch. Let me find the exhibit. It's in the oral argument exhibits, it's Exhibit E, May 16th comments. Now, yes, those comments touched on product coding and product reporting questions. They didn't identify any mismatch. They didn't say this is the problem. Commerce asked this question about this problem. So even if you can read in petitioner's comments to somehow give us notice and read in petitioner's comments to somehow alleviate the statutory burden that's on Commerce, their deficiency comments didn't do that. Their efficiency comments just said, this is a general issue we would like you, Commerce, to explore further. Here's some suggested questions. It didn't identify any deficiency. And, of course, it wasn't Commerce's word, so even to the extent the deficiency was identified, it wasn't Commerce.
Hold on a second. And you say they suggested some questions that might be included in a supplemental questionnaire?
Yes. Yes.
And did these questions go to reporting? Condom reporting.
It did go to condom reporting.
I mean, what I'm trying to get at is, since Commerce decided not to ask any of these questions, does that suggest what does it suggest to you?
Oh, well, to be clear, Your Honor, Commerce did ask many of these questions. I don't have it.
What about the ones they didn't ask?
That's
what puzzles me. If they really wanted to know something that was included in one of these suggested questions, you would have thought they would have used the question.
And apologies, Your Honor. I just want to do just to see if I can compare really quickly. They included most, if not all, of the questions, I believe.
Including the one on condom or wasn't there one? I'll look at the exhibit. You don't have to answer.
So there's a series of questions, and they relate to the product code and product reporting, but none of them relate to how. None of them relate to which source is used to code the condom, and none of them relate to these claimed mismatches. You know, so the mismatch issue, you know, it was in our initial data. It didn't come out as this into this process. We got the question, you know, based on these general comments from petitioner about, you know, tell us what this code means. Tell us how this gets to that. Tell us what this code means. And Commerce put some of those questions in, along with this open-ended, ensure you've done everything right question. And, you know, it's a simple point, but it's worth highlighting. And we include this just in this brief timeline at Exhibit A. You know, we submitted our supplemental response on July 11th. It wasn't until September 11th that petitioners submitted their pre-preliminary comments in which they really hammered this mismatch issue. You know, so to the extent we should have been on notice, we only became on notice as of September 11th. You know, this issue was not part of the comments. It wasn't part of Commerce's questionnaire. This only popped up at this point, and Commerce issued its preliminary decision shortly thereafter. Of course, subsequent to the preliminary results, we submitted a letter asking Commerce to, you know, now that you've claimed that this is this big issue, let us tell you about it. Ask us whatever you want. Commerce declined to do that. They had months until the final results. Rather than investigating the question, they were happy to sit on this AFA call and happy to juice the margin up, but had no interest in getting to the bottom of the issue. To the extent that the issue was there, it only came up after all of the submissions were in.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, I had a few points, but I think I've, in a roundabout way, I think I've checked all the boxes that I intended to hit here. Just to, again, emphasize, you know, this came up after the supplemental response. Commerce's main question that they've pointed to, that they've hung their hat on, doesn't notify anybody of any nature of a deficiency. It's just an open-ended, ensure you reported it correctly. And if you go back and look at the investigation, which is really what the other side has to rely on, they can't rely on the facts of this case. They have to pull things forward from the investigation. And if you read it closely, the facts are truly different. We've highlighted the key paragraph on page 62 of the decision memo that says that where certain sales had a mismatch, Commerce accepted the explanation for certain of them. That means that these mismatches can occur and itself does not apply or does not automatically result in AFA. And then finally, just one other point from the investigation decision memo I'd like to highlight. The mismatch sales, which Commerce applied AFA for, it's discussed at the top of 63 in the investigation decision memo. And it relates to these Spec C sales. And Commerce's note about applying AFA is for the U.S. sales associated with Spec C issue, which are limited to a small volume of U.S. sales, they're assigning AFA. There's nothing in this, and we'd be happy to supplement the record with materials from the investigation. There's nothing in this to suggest that Commerce applied AFA to entire condoms. It was limited to specific sales, and not on this condom-wide basis as Commerce has done in this first review. And
okay,
with that, unless Your Honor has
if we need anything else, we'll let you know.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Is there anything on this subject that anyone would like to say, or shall we move on? All right, let's move on. Is that Mr. Morris?
Your Honor, it's Tom Beeline from Cassidy Levy Kent on behalf
again.
Of...
Again? Well, I really got that screwed up.
Well, I'm sorry. I we're the consolidated plaintiffs.
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay. So, Your Honor, I don't intend to take up a lot of time presenting our argument. It's an issue of law argument at bottom. We spent a lot of time this morning and into early afternoon talking about the underlying facts. Our argument is it concerns an issue of an all others rate being assigned to a specific company that, in Commerce's analysis of the administrative record, it determined that that company was neither an exporter nor producer of the subject merchandise. And so we've identified two legal issues in assigning an all others rate to a company that neither exports nor produces. So
what do they do?
So I think I can say publicly that they are in logistics.
Okay. And why would it matter whether they had a rate or not?
Because they happen to be an affiliate of a company that has a different rate than they have. And therefore, our concern was one of potential funneling or undermining of a higher rate that Commerce had assigned to their affiliate.
All right.
And so that's the only reason why we're here, honestly, Your Honor, is that there's this overarching concern. And the overarching concern stems from the fact that they appear in public-facing data as potential shippers of the product. And if you didn't know any better, you could claim their rate as the entry rate for purposes of this anti-dumping duty order, thus undermining the remedy on their affiliate. So in that regard, what we're arguing is that once it became apparent to Commerce that they neither exported nor produced because of how their record developed, there was no authority under the statute to assign them an all others rate. I think what you have presented to you is Commerce basically saying, well, there was a request for review out there for them. And that's true, but what do you do with that when the record establishes that they have no exports and they have no production? Our view is that you could do two things. One is you don't have to assign a rate because the statute doesn't give you authority to. And we cite at page 10 and into 11 of our brief, all of the statutory authority for assigning rates to parties that are exporters or producers. Beyond that, we basically provided to Commerce in our underlying case brief an alternative, which was to say, Commerce, you've developed a new practice where if you have a non-producing and non-exporting entity that is affiliated with a respondent under review, you'll collapse them with each other in order to avoid any undermining of a rate that you might assign to either affiliate. And so we basically said, okay, Commerce, if you say that you have to do something with this party since there's a request for review out there for them, at least collapse them with their affiliate and thereby covering off any issues that might occur by assigning them a lower all others rate. I'm happy to answer questions for Your Honor, but our argument is pretty much that simple.
Okay. Who else would like to talk about this?
Your Honor, Elizabeth Speck from the government. I can briefly submit the government's comments on this issue. Commerce reasonably declined to rescind its review of this company and also reasonably determined not to collapse these two companies. The relevant statutory provisions, 1675A1, make administrative reviews dependent on requests for review. Here, Commerce followed its practice of requiring that interested parties withdraw their requests within 90 days of the date of the initiation notice, which is 19 CFR 351.213D1. We note that U.S. Steel rescinded 13 other requests for reviews on a timely basis, but did not request to withdraw this company until its case brief, which was over 200 days after the applicable deadline. We submit that all of the statutory provisions that U.S. Steel has relied upon leave Commerce a significant amount of discretion in terms of rescinding an administrative review or who to conduct administrative reviews, which companies to conduct them for. In terms of the collapsing determination, the collapsing regulation is highly fact-specific. The regulation, which applies to producers, requires affiliation and similar production facilities. But then in terms of the factors for the potential for manipulation, those are highly fact-specific, non-exhaustive, and the potential for manipulation is based on the totality of the circumstances. And here, Commerce reasonably declined to extend its practice of collapsing companies that aren't necessarily producers based on the record. But just note that U.S. Steel's brief discussed in the reply stated that we didn't address the distributors specifically in the cut-to-length plate from Korea case. We'd note that we disagree that Commerce, we want to submit, we don't think it's clear exactly what the nature of these distributors were. But here, we would submit that U.S. Steel's argument that this company has the capacity to be involved in the distribution of cold-rolled steel is a step that's too attenuated from Commerce's practice.
Maybe you could just tell me, why was this the right thing to do?
The right thing to do because Commerce didn't determine, decided not to extend its practice. Here we'd note the type of company that Company A is would not necessarily purchase subject merchandise before performing the services that it performs. And there's no question that it's not an exporter, and therefore we would submit that it doesn't have the ability to manipulate price, which is the ultimate which is the ultimate focus of the collapsing regulation, that just the capacity to be involved in distribution wouldn't necessarily require Commerce to extend this highly specific practice that it has, a highly fact-specific determination of collapsing based on the record.
But if that's the case, why should they have a rate at all?
Again, the burden here is on the Commerce that adhered to its practice of requiring that the party rescind its request. Here, U.S. Steel did rescind 13 other requests on a timely basis, but again, waited until 200 days later to rescind this request. And so Commerce adhered to the timelines and the regulation.
Yeah, but why, just as a matter of policy, why is this the right thing to do?
It's the right, in terms of assigning a rate, the statute doesn't necessarily require Commerce to make the determination that U.S. Steel says it has to make. The statute focuses on the request for review. In the terms of not collapsing the companies, Commerce determined that the nature of the services that they provided, again, collapsing focuses on the ability to shift production in order to avoid a high rate from one producer to another, and it determined that the types of services that they provided wouldn't be the types of services they wouldn't purchase the subject merchandise before performing those services, and they wouldn't have the ability to manipulate price, so it was appropriate to have two separate rates.
Well, I must be misunderstanding you. I thought that you were telling me that the likelihood that this assigned rate, the all others rate, would ever actually be used for any purpose was kind of remote. That you weren't saying that to me?
Well, Your Honor, it's not a producer and it's not a distributor. Obviously, the company wasn't concerned enough to bring this issue to the Commerce's attention. That certainly is one factor in terms of what Commerce said in the issues and decision memorandum. It focused on the fact that they weren't an exporter or a producer in terms of collapsing as to why it wouldn't be appropriate to extend it to this company that performed these types of services. And then it adhered to its its regulation in terms of requiring them to require to withdraw their request for review within 90 days of the initiation notice.
All right. I don't get this, but I'll try to figure it out. Would anyone else like to speak on this issue?
Your Honor, this is Henry Morris on behalf of Hyundai Steel. If you don't mind, I'd like to add a few quick comments.
Okay.
First, I'd like to say that we reiterate a lot of what the government has just laid out and believe they did a good job of presenting the history here and the...
Well, maybe you could tell me why just, you're not the government, so why don't you, why is this, why would you want to leave this on the books? Why is this policy the right one?
Well, Your Honor, so Hyundai Steel did not take a position on whether the separate rate should be, or the review should be rescinded for this particular affiliate. And we continue to not take a position on that issue, which I believe is what you're getting at. We are just focusing on the issue of whether it would be appropriate to collapse the affiliate.
Okay.
So I can speak to that.
And maybe you could tell me why this would be a good policy in addition to citing the statute.
Sure. So again, just on the collapsing issue, because
yes,
on whether or not the review should be rescinded, we don't have to take a position except to say, to note that, and again, this would just be to reiterate that.
No, don't, just tell me that you think it should be collapsed, so with the...
No, you're...
The company
Your
that's...
Honor,
tell me which side you're on.
Our position is that the affiliate should not be collapsed.
And why?
Because the Commerce's decision is controlled by the regulations. And in particular, the regulation is 19 CFR 351-401 subsection F. And if you look at the regulation, it's very clear that the requirement is that the affiliate be a producer. And it's undisputed on the record that this particular affiliate is not a producer of subject merchandise. And it would be, our position is that based on what this affiliate actually does perform, its actual role, it's simply not contemplated under this regulation. And for that reason, Commerce's decision here to not collapse the affiliate is a proper decision, and it's not contrary to law.
Do you have a view? But except for if the regulation didn't exist, would it be the sort of sensible thing to do to collapse it? I guess you don't
Your
have
Honor,
to answer
I believe it goes.
You don't have, you don't have to answer that question. Okay. I have your argument, I think, but if you would like to say anything else, go ahead.
Your Honor, it's Tom Beilein. I think we can rest on our argument because I think you understand what our plaintiff's argument is here, and that something obviously needs to be done with this. And I think, you know, Your Honor's asking the right questions. And if we can answer any questions that are beyond, you know, what Commerce's underlying policy was, we'd be happy to do so. But what we can say is that we don't see how the law supports it, and we don't think that it's a reasonable application of their existing practice. And so those are the two bases for why we think something different should happen here, and a remand would be appropriate.
Okay.
And, Your Honor, I did just want to – would I be able to just conclude my remarks?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Who's speaking?
This is Henry Morris on behalf of Hyundai Steel.
Okay.
Just to really briefly conclude. So, again, we believe that Commerce's decision was a proper application of an unambiguous regulation, and just – as a final note, because Commerce in this situation was interpreting their own regulations, they are afforded an even higher level of deference in that in their decision, unless, and this is quoting a former CIT case, unless it's found that Commerce's decision is plainly erroneous or inconsistent with the regulation. And again, here, based on the language...
Which case are you citing?
This is Union Steel Manufacturing.
Who was the author?
This is it's from our response brief on page 13. I would have to...
that's okay. I'll find. Thanks for
following up on that.
Anything else to your argument?
That's all, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yes, Your Honor. Sorry for this is Henry Almond again for Hyundai Steel. And just since there's been Your Honor's had a few questions on this topic, I just wanted to mention, and Mr. Morris addressed this, that you know we don't really take a position with respect to whether Commerce rescinds the review for this company, but we absolutely would not object to it. We think the record shows that the company is not a producer or exporter. Commerce may have policy reasons for why it requires certain proof to get in or out or why it requires rescission of the review, but we do think that we certainly do not object to them rescinding, given that the company is not a producer or exporter. So I just wanted to add that one piece.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else? Okay. Now, does that mean that we have covered all of the issues that we intend to cover today?
I believe so.
Ms. Beck, could you tell me?
Nothing else from the government,
Your Honor. You will have kept track. Mr. Almond?
Sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear the question.
I'm sorry. Is there anything else that we should be covering here today?
Nothing from the government, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Allman?
And nothing, this is Henry Allman, nothing from Hyundai Steel further, Your Honor.
Okay. Anything from anyone else?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, then thank you all very much. At least some of you are going to be on the next case that we're going to hear today. What time was that supposed to start? 2:30, I think. Is that true?
2:30. That's correct, Your Honor.
So why don't we leave it that way? Does anyone mind if we just leave it for 2:30?
No, that's perfectly fine, Your Honor. We can have some lunch, which would be a nice break.
Okay, great. So thank you all very much for this argument, and court is adjourned.
Thank you.